Welcome to the Seattle Mariners Pod. My name is Jeff Budke. Changing it up a little bit today, we brought in an old friend, producer Ben. How's it going?
It's going well. Very well.
The sun is shining. This is May 10th, I believe. Feliz Dias de Mayo, as they say in Mexico. We're doing a little bit different today. We're doing a feature on sports in Seattle and effect on the Seattle Mariners in a couple weeks. When you all hear this, I'll be out of town, and Peyton will be busy as well. So we wanted to have something for the listeners, so we have something every week. Ben, what are you doing right now with your life, now that you're done producing the best podcast we've ever had, the Sports Haven podcast? What's your life looking like now?
It's pretty boring. Technically, I am at work right now, so let's just pretend this didn't happen. So I know you just gave away the date, so hopefully my boss won't notice this.
Oh, well, this is in the evening.
Oh, perfect. I mean, it's after work hours, so I'm just hanging out. Nothing's going on. You know, the usual.
The usual stuff. We often get stuck in conversations on the business of sports. And a prime example tonight, this will be a couple weeks back for those listening, the Mariners are doing a thrift shop night, capitalizing on Macklemore's, you know, insane popularity right now. And they're doing like a dress-up contest. It's a college night. And it's just, they just do everything they can to put butts in the seats. And especially on like special nights, like a Friday night when it's sunny, they're trying to capitalize. What do you think about their, it doesn't seem like they're trying to be consistent with attendance. They're trying to get big nights like with the Supreme Court or this special here. What do you think about that as far as like a marketing standpoint?
Well, I think their marketing department's doing fine. I'm not the biggest fan of their slogan this year, the True to the Blue. I think it's a little cheesy.
And we've made fun of it pretty often.
Yeah, it has become a saying that we use as far as things that are actually terrible when they should be good. I think their marketing efforts, they've done pretty well. I mean, with most baseball teams, you do things on weekends, to try and boost attendance numbers. When you have a season that has so many games, that's just the nature of things that you try and do giveaways and do little short-term things to boost attendance for one night. So I don't see that the Mariners are doing anything differently than other baseball teams, and I think overall it's a good idea. I think the problems go much deeper than that, than just some surface marketing thing.
There have been problems with this team, with the, you know, it even goes farther than is this team winning or not. The likability factor, what we do with players, how they sign them, the players they sign haven't really panned out. Where do you think the disconnect starts with this team and the city?
Well, I think there's a lack of trust between the fans and the ownership group. We've been in a rebuilding period for about 10 years now, and that's just too long of a period to put the fans through. You just can't expect good numbers when you put them through that. I think the fans feel that the ownership is mismanaged and they're not really in it for the winning, but more just for the money. And so I think that has caused a strain on the relationship and something that won't be healed over time. I think they've got to figure it out soon and get back to winning ways, because I think they're also eroding long-term fans, and they're also not acquiring new ones, which is a problem with, you know, multiple sports, possibly more professional teams moving into the area. So they got to figure things out soon.
The Mariners have been in existence in Seattle for 36 years. They haven't made the playoffs since 2002. That's been over a decade.
Yep.
And you think about what's on the horizon. Do you want to jump into that a little bit, or do you want to wait with, you know, Sonics, hockey team? There's other things coming.
Yeah.
To vie for the attention of the Seattle sports fan, and I want to touch on the Sounders as well. But we can start with basketball or in hockey if you want.
Yeah, ultimately, there's a limited amount of sports dollars that everybody's going to spend. Now, granted, you're going to have basketball fans that have always been basketball fans and hockey fans that have always been hockey fans that won't jeopardize any of what's going on with the Mariners. But you have this section that's just a general sports fan, and if I'm going to have to make a decision between buying a partial season ticket package with the Sonics or a new hockey team, and I'm putting that up directly against a 20-game package with the Mariners, you're going to see a huge drop-off there.
I mean, if you can go to 5 Sonics games, a team that's been gone for 5 years, and pay the same for 20 Mariners games, a team that has stayed here despite frustrating its fans, it's an easy decision.
Yeah, it really is. And I don't think it's going to be catastrophic for the Mariners, but it's definitely going to have an effect, especially with how they're performing, because I think performance, above all, is going to change things when you have more professional sports teams in one city.
So the decline from 2002 to the Jack Zirenzik era, Bavassi, one of the worst GMs, well, I want to say like in Seattle sports, but it might be more than that. When you think about that era where we signed Adrian Beltre, where we signed Richie Sexson, traded Adam Jones for Eric Bedard, like what do you think about that? And like, do you think that was the start, or am I searching for something that may not be there?
No, I think it really is. He cannibalized everything that the Mariners had going for them. He sold out the farm system for major league players that didn't pan out. When he made that trade for Bedard, he thought the team was much better than they actually were. I think they overperformed the year before, and so he was anticipating a playoff run. So we sold out our farm system for a player who ended up being not very good and injury prone. And we bought him and put him on a team that wasn't actually as good as we thought they were. So In essence, we stopped the rebuilding process, cannibalized it, and it's almost like two cycles of rebuilding that we are now coming out of.
Bavassi was fired in 2008. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that lines up to the Sounders' first season in Seattle.
They're on their fourth year. That sounds right, yes.
2008-2009. And the popularity from this team that went from playing in the USL down... I think they were at Starfire. Or is that their name?
They were downtown at the stadium.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just getting into Major League Soccer, this city has really adopted the Sounders as their team. You see more scarves and you see more jerseys. You see more of that downtown than you see anything else, any other sport, which is fascinating because of the Seahawks, and we'll get to that. What do you think the Sounders had to do with any of that and the popularity of the baseball team?
I think the Sounders did a great job of launching their brand. They did a good job of getting merchandise out, and they made it very popular to wear Sounders gear around town. They piled on with the growing popularity of the sport in a city that matches up well with a demographic that enjoys soccer. It's more of a younger sport. It's more hip. In some ways, these are just cliches, not necessarily true. But I think Seattle's culture lines up really well with soccer. And so on the tails of losing the Sonics, we had a lot of fans that didn't have necessarily a team, and the Sounders just presented a good place for them. And I think there were a lot of soccer fans here that just didn't have a team to call their own. That's how I was. I was a soccer fan without an MLS team to call my own, and so it just became a logical choice to become a massive Sounders fan in a city that I live in.
A really fascinating thing for me when I look at this city, I'm sure, like, at this point, we've already been made fun of for not bringing up the Seahawks. But when I think about the Seahawks, that's a much wider entity than the city of Seattle. The Seahawks, you know, from Spokane to Southern Oregon and up to Alaska. Like, that's the team.
Yeah.
It's the Mariners, and you don't have much else. I'm sorry, the Seahawks, and you don't have much else as far as football. The next closest team is Oakland.
Right.
And, you know, soccer, I think, gave the city more of an identity when the Seahawks gave Washington State and the Northwest an identity in a sports team. Am I off base there? What do you think?
No, I think that's accurate. The NFL is far more popular than the MLS is and probably will be for some time. So it makes sense that the Seahawks reach as much farther. And it's also a sport that is very good on TV and often better in TV than in person, whereas I would argue the opposite for soccer. And so it makes a ton of sense that the Seahawks reach as much further.
So the reason I say that is to say this. The Seahawks play 16 games a year. Mm-hmm. The Sounders play 34 games a year, 17 at home, about that, plus U.S. Open Cup games and things like that.
Yeah, so you're looking at 25-ish.
25 at home. The reason the Mariners, that it's so bad they lost the city a little bit in 2008, when the Sonics left and when the Sounders showed up, they had an opportunity to take that, but because of Bill Bavassi's decisions, if you live in the city, if you live close by, you have 81 opportunities to go to a game. And if a team is rolling, if a team is good, it becomes more than a social outing and becomes, hey, I'm going to go watch one of my teams, win a game. And they lost that. And an opportunity at a time where they could have really catapulted themselves
to the forefront. Yeah, it really set them back. I mean, there was a huge opportunity there in those years. I think there was a year and a half in between the Sonics leaving and the Sounders coming in.
Okay.
And it was, you know, they could have taken all that if they had a team that was watchable and just grabbed in a whole bunch of new fans, and they just didn't. And there's no way that did not hurt them.
They didn't have the team to do it.
Nope. And they didn't have the ownership to hold them accountable to make smarter decisions. They didn't have a lot of things.
I'm sure that the Mariners weren't basing general management decisions on the Sonics potentially leaving, because that...
No, I mean...
You look at Sonicsgate, that happened correct. Very quickly.
Yeah. And I don't know that they necessarily should have. I mean, it's not like you just say, oh, you know, we're losing a professional sports team. It's time to really spend money and build up our team. Like, that should always be the goal. It shouldn't hinge around the Sonics leaving.
If you're not the Florida Marlins, who have somehow stumbled into two championships in the last 15 years, while imploding the team three or four times, like, the Mariners, it would have been nice if they were in a position to... Like, I think most major league clubs are in a position where they're respectable, that they're growing consistently, the farm is still, like, raising itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, the Sonics are leaving, let's go get player X, let's go get player Y. That would have been a time to make that splash, but because they'd already wasted their finances, because they already put themselves in a poor position early, they couldn't do that. Yeah. It wouldn't have mattered. Interesting. I find this really interesting as far as just, like, missing out on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's really too bad.
Yeah. I see you looking at Felix numbers. Do you want to say something about...
No, it's just sad because you go to look up his playoff numbers and you realize he's never played in a playoff game.
He hasn't.
Which is hard to imagine. And I've talked to you about this personally, but last year I decided not to go to a Mariners game. I was just boycotting the whole year because I was upset with how the team was being run top level down.
You kept your dollars in your pocket.
Yeah, and I didn't spend a single dollar at Safeco Field. I went to one game because I got a free ticket, and I refused to buy anything at the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
But then after Felix signed his new contract and hearing him get emotional when he said he was committing his future to the team and how he completely believed in it, I made the decision this year to support the Mariners just a few times, and not like I bought a season ticket package or anything. But it was just like I felt like I owed it to Felix to show up... Because he cared so much about our city and had given up some money and some popularity to stay with his team and stick with us. So in essence, I've decided to show up to the ballpark this year because of what Felix did for this city and how he's committed himself to the future of this club.
It was a very conscious decision from you because you felt the same thing from Felix, who was the first of... You're about to see a series of starting pitchers get new deals. Felix signed... And then within a month, Justin Verlander signed for an absurd amount of money.
Right.
Down in L.A., Clayton Kershaw is about to get paid.
Yeah, and Felix took less money and also sacrificed the ability to play for a playoff contender every single year. Yep. And so that's admirable, especially when he did it because he believes in the city and he believes in the team. So... For those reasons, I felt like I had to support the team just because I care so much about what he did. So
I mean, someone forgot to tell him that this isn't a contract year. Like, he's absolutely destroying right now.
I know.
He's leading the league in innings pitched, and his ERA is second in the American League. Or no, it's second in the American League with 1.53. It's just absolutely crazy. And the rest of the staff, well, we're not really talking about that very much, but it's a disaster. Besides Iwakuma.
Yes.
You have two... aces and three guys you don't really want on your team. It's not a good sign for the future. So let's talk about the Sonics. And I want to be careful how we talk about this because there's hope from the Kings that developed today. Where I think in my mind I'd kind of given up on that.
I mean, I still think it's about the same. I'd say there's probably maybe a 10% chance that the Sonics come back. I'd say...
This year.
I'd say that the Sacramento deal is probably about to go down, and that the team is probably going to stay in Sacramento. From comments we've heard from other NBA owners, it sounds like Seattle is an option for other struggling teams, Milwaukee probably being the most likely. There's some other fringe teams, maybe Charlotte if Michael Jordan wanted to get out.
in the bottom five of attendance this year, two of them were playoff teams in Milwaukee, granted they had a sub-500 record, and Indiana. And those are two teams that have been thrown around for coming to Seattle. I actually think, whether it be David Stern or Adam Silver, who's taking over next year, they will not let Chris Hansen go. Chris Hansen is the investor that is kind of running the Mariners. What do you call that?
The Sonics investment group?
The Sonics investment group,
correct.
Yeah, which has Microsoft involved and Nordstrom.
Steve Ballmer.
And
yep.
Nordstrom involved.
And Nordstrom.
And that's money that isn't going away anytime soon. And I think David Stern and Adam Silver recognize that. They both are run by, you know, finances dictate everything that David Stern has done since he got to the league. And that's why the league is doing so well.
Well, and as news broke today, they upped their bid for the Kings by $75 million.
That's not a small amount.
Which values them at the sixth most valuable team in the league at the same level of the Miami Heat, which is absolutely absurd considering it's a small market team from Sacramento that's absolutely terrible.
I mean, joking aside, though, who would have better fans, Seattle or Miami? Like, it's not even close.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
The Seattle has a top 10 market as far as sports atmosphere and merchandise. And
well, the biggest thing is numbers, and Miami has a better TV market, but Seattle isn't terrible. They're in the top 15. They're also considered one of the gateways to Asia, which mm-hmm. is huge for potential growth of the league.
Well, you think about every year the NBA has, like, they celebrate the Chinese New Year. Everyone wears red warm-up shirts and stuff like that. And I think our closest connection to would it be Golden State?
Yeah, likely Golden State. I mean, any West Coast team technically has the ability. It's just that you've never seen a connection between a city like Sacramento and the Asian markets.
I mean, I grew up in Portland. I don't associate Portland with as an Asian connection just because it's pretty far inland as far as not being on the water.
I think that the Sonics. You can view them as a potential gateway is because the Mariners were able to do it with Ichiro and the Japanese market.
Yeah.
And so if they can do it in baseball, then it also seems likely that they could replicate it in basketball. And it's yet to be seen how it's going to be done and how the league's going to move forward with it. But Seattle as a city would make perfect sense.
So the reason I ask all that is if the Sonics return, whether it be in 2013 or 2014... how will that affect the Mariners, who, for the first time this year, had a night at Safeco Field under 10,000 people?
Well, I think it hurt in terms of attendance, but in terms of their new TV deal, it would be huge. Now, as you've probably... I don't know if you talked about this on the pod before.
We've touched on it, but right when it broke, we didn't really talk about it in detail.
So the Mariners and their new TV deal, they now have a controlling ownership of Root Sports.
Mm-hmm.
Which is huge. It's what the Yankees have done with the YES Network. Basically, what it allows them to do is to sell their rights to themselves, and so they can under Major League Baseball's profit sharing, they can make it look like they sold their TV rights for very little, and that's all the money they have to claim as income, and then include in their profit sharing with the rest of the league, when in essence they're probably, you know, making three or four times more that amount of money based on what they're getting off of their own TV station.
Well, to put it in perspective for the Yankees, the majority of their revenue comes from the YES Network.
Right, and it would be the same for the Mariners.
And they sell out every game, and they sell the most merchandise, Derek Jeter jerseys. It's all truncated by this YES Network.
Right, which is what the Mariners would be doing to follow suit. It's what the Dodgers have recently done. Cleveland Indians have also done.
Cleveland?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, so we had Root Sports. Root Sports used to play, they always play some college football games. They get college basketball. Gonzaga, they really capitalized on. They tried doing Seahawks stuff. They could never win the rights to that because the NFL is so expensive.
Right.
But they do like a Seahawks insider show. What other sports? Soccer as well.
Yeah, it'd match up perfectly. They could do a Sounders, Sonics, and then NHL, whether they're called the Metropolitans or the Totems. And you could just have this huge sports network for Seattle. If you could get four...
You think they would call them the Totems? We're going to pause for a second.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
But, like, you have... I even look at like a team like the Washington Redskins, and I think to myself, can we really still do that? Like,
yeah, but totems isn't a derogatory term towards Native American or First Nations person.
Okay,
a totem, you know, it's never been looked at as.
And you think that's enough?
A slur, yeah.
Okay, it'd be like a tribute.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's keep going. So I don't know how that would work logistically, but go ahead and continue your thought.
So if you could get four professional teams from the Seattle area on one network, you're going to be able to get into a ton of different homes, and a lot of cable and satellite packages are going to pick that up because you can't be missing out on all those games. So that just gives the Mariners control of all of this money and the power to do what they want with their own television network. So it's a huge potential opportunity for the Mariners. So that part would help them, but obviously then you're still fighting with attendance issues and everything else that goes along with having more teams in the area, just competing for those sports dollars.
I already have like three questions based off this. I'm going to start with the first one. Logistically, can one station fit in 159 Mariners games, 45 Sounders games, a home and away? I have no idea how many games are in a hockey season, and then 82 basketball games. That seems incredibly difficult.
Yeah, because the seasons don't really overlap, and a lot of times you're playing at different times. I mean, how many games do you think ESPN shows?
A lot.
Yeah, a lot.
And but they also have ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN3.
Correct. So but if you're trying to cram four sports teams into one station, it's definitely doable. I mean, sometimes you'll have games overlapping, but you'll also then have the control to have some say in the scheduling as well, because if you're the sole provider of TV, you have a lot of say in how the schedules get made.
I assume, well, obviously they couldn't play a home game at the same time, but you'd hope the Totems and the Sonics would play on like every other day kind of thing.
Right, or their home and away wouldn't line up, or different mm-hmm. times. You have a lot more flexibility with NBA.
I like the
NHL.
Totems. That's fun. Yeah. That was fun to say right there. And then the Sounders. So what happened in Portland with the Blazers about 4 or 5 years ago, Comcast Sportsnet took the Blazers
mm-hmm.
with the idea of doing this like Mariners network, making it more of like Blazers centric. But what it ended up doing, because stations like DirecTV providers like DirecTV and Dish just didn't ever sign on to Comcast. And so you either had to have Comcast, an inferior, you know, provider,
mm-hmm.
or you didn't get to watch the Blazers games. It was that simple, and it still is that way, where if I go home, I might get to watch a game, but I probably won't.
Yeah.
And this Mariners network, I think it would actually hurt the team if they didn't get other sports, if they didn't get those rights.
Just because it'd be more difficult to get the channel into more basic packages for everybody to see, is what
yeah,
you're saying.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't get into as many homes. Yeah, I mean, that's something you're always going to have to fight against. You know, if you're gaining more income from owning your own TV network, but you're also missing out on TV sets and getting more fans.
Yeah.
It's a constant juggling act. So if you can land more sports teams and get into more homes, then it's just a win-win. You don't lose.
What do you think about,
as far as TV goes?
Yeah. What do you think about the idea of extending it out of Seattle? Because with what we just said, Sounders, Mariners, Totems, and Sonics, that would be the perfect layout for the Seattle Sports Network, SSN, something like that.
Yep.
But if they wanted to extend their brand, going after a team like the Blazers, maybe even
Vancouver,
the Whitecaps, Canucks. You probably wouldn't want to show the Canucks with the Totems in town.
Well, why not? I mean, it's not like you're saying, oh, because the Vancouver Canucks are shown on the station, I'm not going to watch the Totems. I mean, you tune onto the station to watch your team.
Yeah.
The same with if you have both the Sounders and the Timbers owned by Root Sports.
Which I find interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so you're doing some of the commercials seem weird because they have both fans in them.
Well,
but ultimately, you're not turning off the TV and not watching your team because you know they also have the rival on.
That's correct.
I mean, that's just not a decision you'd ever make.
It is interesting watching a Mariners game and getting a Sounders commercial and then the next set of commercials getting a Timbers commercial. It's a very, very strange thing for me.
It is a little weird.
Like, it seems like a conflict of interest.
Or the montage where they're mixing and matching
yeah,
Sounders.
It's as if they're like monopolizing
Timbers, yeah.
soccer, and I almost feel like my fandom is being questioned. I don't think that's the case. It just it comes across as very odd to me.
Yeah. But it would never stop you from turning on the TV and watching your TV.
That's true. I would watch.
It's just a little bit weird.
I don't mean to switch gears as far as getting away from the Mariners, but are you worried about the Sounders' popularity in the grand scheme of things, being in their fifth year, and also in the sense of adding the Totems and adding the Sonics back again, like in the next couple of years? What will that do for the popularity of soccer in Seattle?
It's tough to say. The Sounders are so new and they're so much more popular than I anticipated that it's tough for me to say what they would lose if they went through a downturn in performance on the field and if more sports teams came to the city. I think that we've established I shouldn't speak in the terms of we.
No, that's fine.
But the Sounders have done a good job.
You're a season ticket holder. You pay for above Martin's $16 million contract or whatever it is.
I spent enough money there.
Yeah.
I think that the Sounders have a good fan group, probably 20 to 25,000 of dedicated fans that will come no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's that additional 10 to 15,000 that they get every game that could be lost if performance really dips or if more teams come in. But honestly, I'm guessing at this point. I don't know how strong the market really is or how strong it could be, and it's just tough to tell because I don't think the MLS as a league has ever seen anything like this, and so everything is kind of new. So it's definitely something to keep your eye on as things in this town evolve. It'll be interesting to see if they can get even more fans, if they can eventually start having 45, 50,000 at every game. That would just be crazy, and that would be to numbers that even a lot of European teams don't even see, where soccer is the most prominent sport in the area.
Okay, so I'm going to tie this back to the Mariners, since this is the Seattle Mariners pod. As a fan, let's do this as a fan for a little bit here. When you think of Jack Zirenzik and the job he's doing, what's morale for you, and how do you feel about what's going on with that?
I think a lot of people were making quick judgments at the beginning of the year when they started off so poorly. They've kind of made a little bit of a rebound in the past. I'm not going to judge him until this year's over, but I think they need to be at 500 for this year to be considered a success. I think he's done a great job of rebuilding our youth system. I think it was completely cannibalized from the Bavese era.
Absolutely.
And I think he's done a great job of that, even though some of the top prospects have yet to pan out. It's been disappointing seeing Ackley and Smoke and Montero struggle when I think they really need to come along. So I think he's done a good job with the youth system. It seems like we haven't been able to get the free agents that we need, and I don't know if that's an issue of not being able to attract people to Seattle or just that our team is so bad that players don't want to come. But I think after this year, if we continue to be under 500 and we don't make strides, I'd give him next year even two. If we don't make any more strides, then I think it's time to cut ties with him. I've been a big supporter of his throughout the years, and I still remain this year, although I am less enthusiastic than I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say we have to give him this year, and unless things really tank, I think we continue to keep him next year. And then if we don't see a serious turnaround next year where we're challenging for a playoff spot or in the playoffs, I think it's time to move on. Because I think he's had enough time now where we should have rebounded and completely rebuilt our team. So.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd love to come back with like a thought that's different than that, but it really is. I appreciate, you look at a guy like Kyle Seager, who was a third round pick in the Dustin Ackley draft. And he's developed into just a great player. Michael Saunders, people were ready to give up on him 2 years ago. He's now one of the best Mariners offensively.
I think what will define his time with this club is when the big three come up.
James Paxton, Danny Holson.
If they don't perform, if they were just another group of overrated prospects that don't pan out like we've seen Ackley and Smoke do, then if he's not accurately judging young talent, then I don't think he has a role with this team, because that's what his success has been. He's always been known as a guy who evaluates talent well, which is what he did with the Brewers. And if he can do that for us, then he shouldn't be our GM.
There's no way around if the big three fail, he has failed.
Correct.
Because the big three are...
I mean, it's what we're pinning our hopes and dreams on.
Yeah.
Because if they aren't spectacular, we're not going to be a playoff contender, because we're not going to get free agents. And our team right now isn't anywhere near where it should be as far as contending for the playoffs.
It is early so far in the 2013 season, but I look at our team, and there's hope. They're hovering around 500. I look at a team like the Angels, and I honestly am beginning to laugh a little bit at just how screwed they are financially. They are stuck for the next...
I was beyond happy. I was ecstatic when they signed Pujols to that deal, because it is terrible. It was terrible from the moment he signed it, and it's going to set their franchise back.
He's in his second year of the 10-year contract. He has 8 years left. He's hurt. He's an average baseball player right now. Josh Hamilton is in the first of a 5-year deal worth $25 million a year. He's hitting .202. Jesus Montero has a better batting average.
It's crazy.
And Montero has been awful.
Yep. I think the Angels will be able to buy their way out of their mistakes, but it's going to set them back.
That's 15 years and close to $325 million, maybe even $400 million. Add on top of that, C.J. Wilson, whom they signed last year in the offseason to be an average pitcher for them. Mike Trout is going to be on the books soon.
Yep.
They're not going to be able to avoid... the arbitration will hit them, and his production will be a certain value. Well, that'll increase instead of the $600,000 he's making now. They didn't get him early enough, like the Rays did with Evan Longoria. The Angels are about to be screwed, no matter how much money they bring in.
Well, in some ways, I think they can still buy their way out of it.
Ugh.
But it's still going to hurt them in the sense that they're not going to be able to get other guys. I mean, either way, they're going to be sending a ton of money.
Yeah.
And they'll still be a playoff contender every year because they can spend so much money, but it's really setting them back.
What situation would you rather have right now, Seattle or Los Angeles?
Los Angeles. You kidding me?
They
have Mike Trout and money and a bunch of horrible contracts, but they're still way better than the Mariners.
Yeah. Record-wise, not this year, but yes, they're in better shape. I'm torn with that because I appreciate bringing up from the farm. I appreciate using cheaper players to get free agents, to woo free agents.
Oh,
but
yeah, sure, that's great. But ultimately, all I care about is winning.
And the Angels are probably going to do more of that. Okay.
Remember the last time we were at the World Series?
No.
Yeah, exactly. I'll take the Angels.
Very funny. Well, this has been a horribly depressing podcast.
It's sunny outside in Seattle, but guess what? Guess what it's going to be tomorrow.
I'm sure it's going to rain.
Yep. Good luck with that.
So, Ben, thank you so much for being on the show.
No problem.
We're excited. We're going to be playing this in a couple weeks, and hopefully everything will have worked out perfectly. The Sonics will be here. It'll be a done deal for no reason whatsoever.
If the Sonics are coming, we're doing another pod. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, we'll do that.
I'll be running around with my shirt off, but I'm sure it'll make great podcast material.
May Day will have nothing on what will happen to this city if the Sonics come back.
I won't be throwing stuff at cops, though.
That's true. How long do you think that will last, by the way? Let's say we get Milwaukee or the Kings, and they're just bad for the next 4 years. Just a bad basketball team.
I think you automatically have 2 years. 2 years of horrible basketball that you can get fans in the seats. Other thing is you're going to have 2 years in Key Arena, likely, and then you're going to have a brand new stadium. So you're going to have 2 years where you're going to have fans and in a crappy arena, and then you're going to have another year and a half of excitement over a new arena. By that time, if you haven't turned things around, then you're in trouble. But I can't imagine with how much money they're throwing at buying a team that they're not going to go out and spend big money on free agents. It's hard for me to imagine a team run poorly when it seems like their ownership group knows what they're doing.
It drives me insane when people talk about Oklahoma City having the best fans because of that logic right there. Every team gets 2 years of being like, oh my gosh, this team is here. This is so great. And then when that 2 years ended, They were a finals team.
Well, I mean,
they haven't had a chance to be bad.
I mean, Sacramento has great fans too. Yeah. Some of the best in the NBA. They just have a small TV market, which is why everyone says that they're a crappy market. It's not because their fans suck or don't show up to games. I mean, they have the cowbell and they're crazy down there, but it's because it's a small market. Mm-hmm. And there's not a whole lot of sports in the area, which is exactly what's happening in Oklahoma City. You can pack out the stadium with crazy fans because there's nothing else to do in Oklahoma City. But in the end, you aren't getting the numbers on TV and you aren't generating as much revenue. There's not as much, stuff being sold. So, big deal if they have crazy fans. Like, that's not what the league cares about in the end. It's a nice bonus, but ultimately it's not bringing in the money like a big market is.
Can you imagine David Stern's face if it ended up being Chicago and Indiana in the Eastern Conference Finals? Just like how sad he would be that his stars were gone.
I'm cheering for the Heat, but anything that gets David Stern down will make me smile.
I mean, that'd be hilarious. I can't imagine a worse situation for the NBA, one that I would love more.
What I really hope is that he gets caught with a hooker on one of his last days in the job, and his reputation is tarnished beyond repair, and he lives with that for the rest of his life.
Did you hear about, the woman that flipped off Joakim Noah?
It's the background on my phone because it makes me laugh.
It's hilarious, and she...
That's not true, by the way. It's not creepy.
Well, that woman's a crazy person.
Yeah, well, she's not crazy. She's actually like your next-door neighbor when you live in Miami. That's not actually
it's
crazy.
A normal thing. Who may have killed her ex-husband who was caught with a male stripper named Tiger. And that's what I want to happen to David Stern. Not the dead part. Just the male stripper named Tiger.
I don't actually want David Stern physically hurt or anything. I just want his reputation tarnished and he can't enjoy his retirement. And then he can be like, oh, man, I screwed over Seattle. And that's also another terrible thing I have to live with. That would make me happy.
Okay.
But I'm not bitter. Not one bit.
Thank you for being on the pod.
Not a problem. Anytime.
Cheers. Oh, gosh. As long as we're talking into the mic, kind of like looking at it, we should be fine.
Okay. As long as I'm not sitting with my face too close to yours.